Hello, and welcome to our podcast, From Knox to Rocks, Helping Service Providers Monitor Business Operations. My name is Kate Gerwig, and I'm the editor of TechTarget's SearchTelecom.com. Thank you for joining us for this podcast, which will address one of the latest trends in operations and business support systems for service providers. Establishing a Revenue Operations Center, or a ROC, much as providers have Network Operations Centers, or NOCs, to monitor their network operations. Joining me today to explain what a ROC really is and why establishing one is a growing trend is Jeff Kotroup, the CEO of Market Power, which he founded in 2003. Jeff has been a consultant and an analyst in the OSS-BSS market space for many years at a variety of well-known firms. Thank you for being here, Jeff.
Kate, thanks for having me.
Before we start, let me tell our listeners how this will work. I will ask Jeff questions, and he will tell us all about revenue operations centers and who's doing what. So let's get started with the first question. Jeff, we hear a lot of buzzwords in the telecom and technology markets in general, and one of the ones we're hearing about lately is a revenue operations center, or a ROC. What is it, and why is it important?
Well, the ROC is like a NOC, but for your business. Just as a NOC enables service providers to monitor the status of their networks and services, the ROC enables them to monitor network operations and correlate the impacts on their entire revenue and cost picture, as well as things like financial statements.
The most important thing, however, about any technology is why it was created. The technological and business problems a ROC actually addresses. What is it designed to solve for service providers?
Kate, that's a great question. That's exactly how anybody should be looking at any new technology or product. We could talk a bit about how we got to where we are today, which is in the midst of a revenue leakage epidemic, and how the ROC, or the Revenue Operations Center, may be the powerful medicine operators need to heal themselves from a revenue and overall financial standpoint.
Before you do that, may I ask you a favor? Could you define revenue leakage for anyone who may be unclear with its meaning?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Revenue leakage is like shrinkage in the retail environment. It means you haven't been paid for everything that's gone out the door. In the service provider world, it has three main causes. First are those we at Market Power term proactive, hacker threats. You know, years gone by, we were dealing with things like blue boxes. People were duplicating network signaling tones to give themselves a free open line to the world, calling card fraud or identity theft, the beginnings of identity theft, and cloning of cell phones. Well, technology has fixed some of this. It's getting harder and harder to clone cell phones, and SS7 out-of-band signaling has eliminated things like the blue boxes problem. But there are plenty of other sources. For example, other service providers may be making use of your networks without paying you for the privilege, meaning that you're losing on carrier-to-carrier settlements. You may be hit with overbilling or out-and-out duplicate charges from third-party providers, which today may include digital entertainment media content. Now, we've also seen a little bit of what we look at as ethics leakage over the years, too. We had some creative revenue approaches where one of our U.S. long-distance carriers in years gone by was providing ringback service. So because international calling rates were so much lower outbound out of the U.S. than out of other countries, say, for example, you're in France and wanted to call Germany. Well, you'd call our carrier instead, who would ring you back, giving you open line to the world, and you could place that call to Germany or the U.S. or wherever you want for a lot less money. And, of course, then the PTT was actually experiencing leakage because it wasn't getting the revenue it would have been due for your call. Another scheme right here with long-distance calls in the U.S., Carrier A was launching long-distance calls. But they took a little side trip up through Canada, and when it came back into the U.S. and all, you know, automated call connection, Carrier B found itself paying the access charges to terminate those calls while Carrier A was the one getting paid. And when called to account for this kind of thing in court, Carrier A called it the least cost routing. Maybe since it went through Canada, they should have named it cold calling. I'm not sure. But at any rate, carrier-to-carrier settlements remain a black hole of revenue leakage. And one of the reasons why is we don't think about it. Customers may only see flat rate calling these days, but you know, behind the scenes, money is still changing hands with every call, and it's still falling through the cracks. So that was sort of the first area. The other two areas we look at are either passive or self-inflicted revenue leakage. You may be provisioning some customers per service but never sending them a bill, or maybe you're provisioning them for the highest speed DSL, premium, but billing them for basic. Now, some of what goes on, that's a problem, and we've all, you know, it happens.
And hard to catch.
Right, and never sending them a bill, you can't believe it happens, but, it does. Some of it happens because of stranded assets, the so-called stranded assets problem. A okay, so these are devices that have available capacity which you could be providing services over and billing for it, except that billing or inventory systems don't know that capacity exists. And then, if you can believe this, believe it or not, entire devices like telecommunication switches that through some sort of shaky operational practices somehow managed to go live without ever being recorded in your inventory or network resource management NRM systems. There's another problem, and maybe your inventory provisioning systems do know about a device, poor linkages, or maybe no linkage at all, your billing systems don't. So self-inflicted leakage can also result from bad rate plans, or just service pricing that didn't really cover or account for all costs. You could be receiving bad call records that can't be rated, data formats that were never reflected in your billing system. And so, sarcastically, I'm going to say one of the bonus points with the stranded asset problems, moving back into that, is that not only are you losing revenue every day if you're provisioning over stranded assets or if you're not provisioning over them, but you wasted the CapEx in the first place on network elements that are now invisible to you, and you were going to waste more CapEx again, right? Filling quote-unquote holes in the network due to these network elements that, again, that you don't know are there or capacity you don't know is there.
Anyway, wow. Yeah. Okay. Did you say there was yet one more category? Because that's a lot of categories for revenue leakage.
Well, the passive, self-inflicted, and then also the purposeful or proactive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we're either hackers who are under the radar or corporations who are over the radar and doing creative things. So there's like three areas coming at you. And I guess one of the interesting notes here is that in the history of the telecom and OSS/BSS markets, we talk about the term revenue assurance, and it's relatively youthful, right, compared to things like, you know, fault performance management, which we now know as service assurance.
Mm-hmm.
But today's more innovative operators are actually seeking solutions that go beyond what they call, you know, believe it or not, traditional revenue assurance that merely captures underbilling. One of the reasons they're focusing on it is they're focusing on customer retention, and they're doing that because more revenue is almost certainly lost due to churn and competition than to leakage. Or our figures indicate that these areas may be pretty close, but anyway, it's also a whole other area of problem. And cost savings really can be almost meaningless if churn is rampant, if you're just losing customers constantly. So they're focusing on some things like overbilling and confusing bills that drive calls to call centers, right? You know, and you're increasing your costs. You need more call centers. You need more people to staff them. The other thing is when these calls are coming in as a result of a billing problem, they're dangerous calls because customers who call in with these issues have a higher propensity to churn. Now, on the other hand, you know, water runs downhill. At some point, you have to admit the fact that no matter what you do, some churn is inevitable.
True.
So, right? So operators are looking for systems and methods for customer win-back.
Okay. Wow, that was thorough. Thank you. So back to something you mentioned before at the outset. You said that we were finding ourselves in the midst of a revenue leakage epidemic. What does that mean in terms of the quantifiable pain being experienced in the market?
Yep, a lot of pain. Our best estimates are that leakage represents between 10 or 15% of the revenues on data services today and about 5% on voice. It looks like a $100 billion problem worldwide, and that's billion with a B.
Wow.
If you thought it was a huge problem in the circuit-switched world, you were right.
Mm-hmm.
But in today's packet-switched, content-driven, multi-network, multi-technology world, well, as my teenage daughters might say, epic fail.
Let me ask a quick question, Jeff. Are most service providers clear or aware that the leakage is that high?
We don't know that they are, and we're trying to get the word out.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit later about a specific case with a service provider that the leakage was a lot higher than they thought, I should say. One of the other things that's happening as a result of packet networks is we're now dealing with IP telephony, VoIP, voice over IP, which is actually packetized or data voice. So where I said it was 5% in voice before, the numbers are inching up there as well. The other problem that's going on is M&A. We're creating these global super carriers, which also have super carrier size revenue tracking problems, of course. It will also come as no surprise to you that as consolidate as we will, competition is even as harder than ever. All you have is bigger and more powerful super carriers coming at you, and you're going to face competition literally from anywhere around the world. One of the other items I'd like to address, and just quickly as an aside on all this, is that I talked about, well, circuit switch to packet switch. Well, one of the little conventional wisdom that I've heard a lot is, well, with circuit switch, the opportunity cost, really, because you were looking at fixed cost for your networks, only when we're talking about packet networks is there a real loss. And okay, I can see one side of that, because you may be paying external providers for content, and if you don't collect for that from your customers, well, you're losing on both ends of that pipeline, right? And that is a real loss. But really, in our view, if you're delivering anything that you're not getting paid for, that you're not getting paid fully for, you know what? That was always a loss.
Ah, right. It always was.
Yep.
So, again, enter the ROC. Can you tell us, how is that the answer for service providers? And can you tell us exactly what does a ROC consist of, or, in essence, what does it look like?
Yeah, absolutely. The ROC offers a way forward and a way out of the revenue leakage mess. The first thing it does is it corrects some of the carrier side and vendor side structural factors as we see them. You know, I can't remember the last time anybody talked to me about a solution in service fulfillment or service assurance where they did not tell me all about how integrated it was with everything around it.
Mm-hmm.
Billing processes, as you know, not so much. Island, silo, standalone, pick a term, but these things have been allowed to sort of exist on their own, and a lot of people conveniently really didn't want to know about them. The other thing is we've had such great billing outsourcers out there that there's also been an outsource it and forget it mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, even within billing, different areas, the billing itself, customer care, toll fraud, revenue assurance, different systems have been sort of non-integrated. That's been the rule. So the first thing the ROC does is it integrates all of the billing, revenue, and cost processes with each other. Then it integrates those with the rest of an operator's OSS and BSS infrastructure. And if there are revenue assurance holes, and there almost always are, the ROC fills those, provides systems in those areas. It also brings together all of the data necessary to support correction and prevention of both underbilling and overbilling, okay, as well as reconciliation of things like off-network costs. And in a way that's never been done before, it integrates best practices and systems for cost management into the mix. Now, you asked what it looked like. One of the other just finer points of what a system might include, things like an end-to-end transaction archive to ensure data integrity. It makes extensive use of dashboards, providing visibility of key performance indicators, okay, for revenue analysts and also marketing purposes. Detailed reports, detailed views of reconciliation and dispute resolution. Vendor, Primal Solutions, has something they call a digital microscope that drills down to the exact call detail record. I was going to say CDR, call detail record, or transaction record. And then an important feature is alerts that go out in real time. So you know as soon as something goes wrong, not just as we would talk about with a network fault where service is going to go down, but something's gone wrong with billing, and that needs to be alerted immediately too, instead of the old practice of, well, gee, we learn about the billing errors at month end. So those are some of the components that you would see. In addition to ensuring that revenues aren't leaking out the door, the ROC is also designed to stop customers from walking out the door. And then winning them back, again, water runs downhill. They're going to churn. What do we do to get them back if they do? And it employs some pretty good data mining and similar parts to it that that can inform your marketing and your customer win-back process as well. So what you end up with is a knock-like view of your business, but from a financial perspective, and a way to take positive action, as we've been talking about, to increase customer satisfaction and reduce churn. Of course, it's all happening over a centralized, integrated framework of systems and processes that provides end-to-end monitoring, measurement, and control of operations that really affect costs, revenues, and ultimately profit.
Now, here's the billion-dollar or $100 billion question. Are ROCs still an emerging concept, or is anyone really deploying one?
They are, and I want to talk about, I guess, one of the most innovative service providers in this area that we have seen is Verizon. Its revenue assurance and billing leaders recognize the dangers of revenue leakage, and it's deploying the ROC to minimize the impacts of those on, of course, the financial health of the company. But Verizon has a much more holistic view of the ROC as a way to assure an accurate, customer-friendly billing experience across all of its product lines. And here is where I think they're looking at integrating the ROC with CRM, customer relationship management, blurring the lines a little bit. Now, what has it done for them? Well, some of the impacts are, prior to implementing the ROC, their revenue assurance was done manually, and really they didn't find much that seemed to be wrong. They kind of wondered, you know, what's all the hullabaloo about revenue assurance? But now, after deploying the ROC, which provides a lot of automation, covers exposed flanks and problem areas in ways that they never even thought of before, it also brought granularity into it as well as automating it, they found something like 10 times the number of revenue and cost issues. And some were impacting as few as 3 customers, and others were impacting entire classes of customers. In some cases, they found services that were a whole class of customers hadn't been billed for a couple of months. Can you imagine the revenue impact of that? So anyway, the ROC is eliminating these and other issues, and it's helping them also beyond that, you know, better customer experience, increased profitability.
So it actually helped them find their problems, which I'm sure is good and bad news.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, you know, greater, you know, finding the problems and reaping the profits as a result.
Jeff, where would you say we are in terms of establishing ROCs as a must-have for a next-generation service provider network as opposed to, you know, sort of a nice option? Are we at the very beginning of the process?
Well, you know, not quite the beginning, but you're right. We're close. We're pretty early in the game. But just a historical context, obviously, the first operation support systems were being deployed, I think, back in the 1960s, okay, versus the first known deployment of a revenue operations center was in 2004. And in that case, Brazil Telecom worked with Agilent and Cerebras to create what it called a ROC. That was the first one. 2006, the Telemanagement Forum issued what it called a revenue assurance guidebook and talked about the ROC as providing a, quote-unquote, business level centralized view of your company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so today they're leading providers of the ROC, companies like Subex, ATS, Primal Solutions, Connectiva, LavaStorm. They're all working with one or more world's leading service providers to deploy ROCs. And just some notes of interest on that would be Subex with Verizon, ATS working with AT&T, Primal with Time Warner, Connectiva with Singular, LavaStorm with Altel. There's a lot of companies out there doing great work in this area. And I guess one of the other reasons, one of the reasons I like what I see in the ROC and one of the reasons it's taking off in the market is that, as we've talked about, it takes a lot of what you probably already have in place, one-off standalone fraud systems and leakage and all of that, and integrates it into something that's rare. The whole truly is greater than the sum of its parts. It's not some pie-in-the-sky, vendor-driven adventure that requires a rip-and-replace of everything you have now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It pulls it all together and also fills holes where you have them in terms of revenue assurance today.
Wow. Thank you. I hate to say this, but unfortunately, we're out of time for today. I've learned a lot. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great being here. Thanks.
And now we're all much more up to speed on revenue operations centers, and we probably have more questions to ask you in the future. I just want to mention this podcast today has been brought to you by Alcatel-Lucent. Thanks for joining us.